Sorry for that little musical experiment. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Good morning, everybody here at New Ramanreti and out there on the internets and tuning in later at home. This morning we are reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is the Madhya Lila, chapter 22, I hope, verse numbers 91 through 94. I'll just read all this and then we'll discuss it. Varamhuta vahajvala panjarantar vyavyashtiti Nasori chinta vimuka jana samvasa vaishasham. It is better to accept the miseries of being encaged within bars and surrounded by burning flames than to associate with those bereft of Krishna consciousness. Such association is very great hardship. Purport. This is a quotation from the Katyayana Samhita. Text 92. Madrakshikshina punyak svashid api bhagavan bhakti hinan manusyan. That was a speculation on my part. Translation, one should not even see those who are bereft of devotional service and Krishna consciousness and who are therefore devoid of pious activities. Ete sabachari ara varnashrama dharma akinchana hanalaya krishnaika sharan. Without hesitation, one should take the exclusive shelter of Lord Krishna with full confidence, giving up bad association and even neglecting the regulative principles of the four varnas and four ashrams. That is to say, one should abandon all material attachment. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami masuchaha. After giving up all kinds of religious and occupational duties, if you come to me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and take shelter, I shall give you protection from all life's sinful reactions. Do not worry. Purport. This quotation from Bhagavad Gita, 1866, is spoken by Lord Krishna. For explanation, refer to Madhya Lila, 863. So, I guess it is both a blessing and a curse to speak on this verse, this famous verse. Om Angyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Ebacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So we're continuing here with I think the third chapter now of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Sanatan Goswami. Who is Sanatan Goswami? I wrote a little bit about Sanatan Goswami for an essay I had to write for a karate rank test a number of years ago. So I'm preaching to the karate crowd about the glories of Sanatan Goswami. And just to set the context of why is Lord Chaitanya, you know, why is such a large chunk of this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita dedicated to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Sanatan Goswami? And why is Sanatan Goswami such a seminal figure in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism? So I'm just going to read this. It's not that long. Sanatan Goswami was an early 15th century mendicant, author, and philosopher. Born to an elevated Brahminical family near the modern Bangladeshi town of Jessore, Sanatan lost his caste standing in the Orthodox Hindu society when he'd entered the service of Alauddin Hussein Shah, the Muslim Sultan of Bengal. As the Sultan's treasurer and senior advisor, Sanatan achieved great wealth, fame, power, nobility, and education. Among other perks, his position allowed him to construct several opulent retreats. Like, everybody wants a retreat center, right? So Sanatan's wealth, he had some vacation homes, let's say. In one such retreat in the village of Ramaketi, Sanatan first met the great Bengali mystic and apostle of love of God, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Through the power of his own transcendental potency, Chaitanya convinced Sanatan to give up all of his materialistic engagements and pursue a life of unalloyed devotion to the practice of bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion to God. Predictably, the Sultan was unwilling to let his most trusted advisor go so easily, especially as a convert to the religion of the people he was subjugating. Having discovered Sanatan's plans to abandon his post to pursue a life of prayer and austerity, the Sultan promptly had Sanatan imprisoned. Years later, after much plotting and scheming, Sanatan managed to escape in disguise, walked nearly 700 miles to meet Chaitanya in the holy city of Varanasi. Chaitanya was thrilled by this reunion with Sanatan and was proud to show his superlatively qualified new disciple off to the assembled holy men of Varanasi. Sanatan, however, was loath to accept Chaitanya's adulations. "People think I'm a great man, highly educated, multilingual, wealthy, powerful," he said, "but really I'm a great fool because I do not know who I am or where I am from or why I'm forced to suffer in the world." This is a famous verse also in the Madhya Lila. So just a couple chapters ago, Kayami kene maya jaya tapatraya. Why am I forced to suffer the threefold miseries of the material world? The quest to answer these questions is the foundation of the human experience. While all living things engage in the basic maintenance functions of life, metabolizing, resting, procreating, and defending, I use some synonyms there, and defending the natural resources which they claim as their own, only human beings are capable of inquiring into the purpose of these endeavors or what is their driving agency. Self-reflective inquiry into the origin, nature, and purpose of our existence is what uniquely sets humanity apart from the entirety of the organic world. Without an earnest effort to answer these questions, one cannot truly be called a human, despite having a hominid form. Yet who can claim to know the answers to these questions? Throughout the ages, humanity has constructed megalithic structures, religious institutions, secular universities, private retreats, pharmaceutical, medical, and cosmetic industries, and seminar businesses, right? Everybody loves the seminar businesses of the day to try to find meaning and purpose in our lives, to address head-on the real problems of our existence, birth, death, old age, and disease. Nonetheless, despite great endeavor and expertise, we as a species are no closer to solving these problems than our ancestors. That was an introduction to a karate lecture. But the point here is that, or a karate essay, I should say. But the point here is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is answering these questions for Sanatan Goswami, and that's why so much of this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is dedicated to these instructions. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatan Goswami continuously for a month in Varanasi. And he started at the beginning, right? He started by describing what is consciousness. And so here in this essay, I mentioned the self-reflective need to understand, why am I here? What is causing all of this? This is a function of consciousness. The fundamental function of consciousness is, who am I, right? We're teaching about gravity in our middle school science classes right now. And so I use this example that if you are a scientifically thinking person, what is the first question you should ask yourself when you wake up in the morning in the context of gravity? And the question is why am I stuck to the ground, right? Why am I stuck here? I got to get up. The first thing I need to do is get up. And nobody wants to get up. We'd rather remain stuck to the ground. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his instructions to Sanatan Goswami by describing consciousness. Then he described the structure of both the material and the spiritual worlds. And there's this whole long sequence where there's a description of which Vishnu form has which emblem in which hand and all the different permutations of the Vaikuntha planets. And really what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is unpacking the Bhagavatam. And so he describes the structure of the material and the spiritual world. Then he goes on to describe Krishna, right? Who is Krishna? And now in this section, and we're sort of in the middle, or the beginning of the middle of this section, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is explaining to Sanatan Goswami what is the relationship between the living entity and Krishna. So he's unpacked this whole thing. He's laid all of his cards out on the table, and now he's beginning to explain the process of devotional service. The process of devotional service is the process by which the living entity in the material world uncovers their original consciousness of Krishna. So in the material world, our consciousness is covered and polluted, but that is not the original state of the living entity. The original state of the living entity is to have pure consciousness that is not covered. The path of bhakti is the way out of this, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Where is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu now in the process of describing the process of bhakti? He's talking about sadhu sangha, right? Very, very sharp words, strong admonitions. I'm going to read it again, because who can say it better than Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, who's just quoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? It is better to accept the miseries of being encaged within bars and surrounded by burning flames than to associate with those bereft of Krishna consciousness. Such association is a very great hardship, right? One should not even see those who are bereft of devotional service in Krishna consciousness and who are therefore devoid of pious activities. These are very sharp words, admonishing against the association with non-devotees. And so this, who is this instruction for, right? We see in our own practical lives, we need to associate with non-devotees all the time. And so it's possible to understand these instructions on many different levels. There's the level of just like unalloyed, unadulterated religious fanaticism, which is, I'm never going to associate with a non-devotee ever again. You know, the quote, and I'm hearkening to ISKCON's past now, the quote, dirty karmi kind of mentality. And we're just going to avoid all those people. And we have our nice little enclave here, sort of in the middle of nowhere, where we can go about a life largely devoid of association with non-devotees. Yeah. Even we go to Publix and they're devotees, or we go to Walmart and they're devotees. So even in these places, it's possible in Alachua County, Florida, to find the association of devotees. Also, but then for our work, right? It's our responsibility. We need to go out and earn a living. Many of us have children or raise children, and this, is, of course, a financial austerity amongst other austerities. And so we need to work, and our society of devotees is not so established in the world that we run all of our own businesses and we have all of our own economies. Like, for example, if you were to go to the Upper East Side of New York, the Hebrew people have been established there long enough that they don't need to, they have their own little enclave. They've taken over a little part of the city. And this is true with many religious cultures in many different parts of the world. That's just an example I'm familiar with. We haven't quite reached that level of maturity in the Western world yet. So we need to associate with non-devotees at some times. And then we also see that we have association with non-devotees sometimes because of our missionary activities, because of our evangelicism, right? And so how do we weigh all of these things together? Here, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is making a very strong case against avoiding the association of non-devotees. He said it would be better to be encaged within bars and surrounded by burning flames. Thankfully, I've never been either, so, but I can just imagine. I actually have been surrounded by burning flames. It's a great hardship. So how do we understand these things? For one, it's important to understand at what level we are at in our own Krishna consciousness. So we can see that for the Kanishta Adhikari, the people who are just beginning the practice of devotional service, or the people who are neophyte in the practice of devotional service, yes, it is very important to avoid the association of non-devotees, because the creeper of devotional service for the Kanishta Adhikari is weak. It's like a freshly sprouted seedling, and it can be harmed by rapid changes in environmental conditions. So if our own faith is not strong, we may have trouble when confronted by doubts. And doubt is a function of intelligence, right? And so it's important in our Krishna consciousness to be exposed to and reconcile whatever doubts that we may have. And in fact, not being able to do this is a symptom of a Kanishta Adhikari. Right, not being able to handle any challenges to your religious faith is actually a sign of quite weak faith. And that's okay. People come to Krishna consciousness from somewhere, right? Everybody's got to start somewhere. And so for the Kanishta Adhikari, yes, it's very important to avoid the association of non-devotees. For the Uttama Adhikari, there's no distinction between devotees and non-devotees, right? The Uttama Adhikari is seeing everybody as equal and is treating everybody as a servant of God, and they alone are fallen into the material world. On the Madhyam platform, there needs to be some kind of discrimination. And the example that is set by Srila Prabhupada for our lives is to come up to the Madhyam platform. And if in the hypothetical event that we've surpassed the Madhyam platform and come to the Uttama platform, Srila Prabhupada's own example was to pretend to be a Madhyam anyway. And so as Madhyam Adhikaris, or as aspiring Madhyam Adhikaris, it's actually our responsibility to discriminate and not to just take the Kanishta mindset of blankly avoiding all association. We need to go out in the world, right? Krishna consciousness, I say this to some of our Vaishnav youth, that if they don't learn the art of kirtan, that will be the end of the art of kirtan, right? That will be the end of it, of their generation. So kirtan is an indigenous art, right? We just had our indigenous fair over at the school. And one of the reasons why we want to celebrate indigenous culture is because Bengali Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which we have adopted culturally into our lives, is indigenous culture. This is the worship of Vishnu indigenous to this land, to that land, right? Gaudiya, the lands where the Ganga flows. And so this art has been passed down to us through generations of acharyas, and then brought to the West by Srila Prabhupada. And we have a responsibility of passing it further down. And what is this kirtan? This kirtan is sankirtan. This is to go out in the world and spread the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So how do we go out in the world without associating with the non-devotees? Well, the meaning here is that we don't take their association. We are giving them the holy names of Krishna. But we are not taking from them. We are giving. If you get a little, you got to give a little. And so we've gotten a lot from Srila Prabhupada, and it is our responsibility to go give it to the rest of the world. So we should not take the purport here of avoiding the association of non-devotees as an invitation to retreat entirely from the world. We should go out into the world and give them association. And if you're finding that you don't have good association with devotees, people out online, maybe listening in other towns, you know, away from Alachar or whatever, you can go make your own devotees and then have good association. And so this is spreading the movement, the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing this with the Association of Devotees, but then he's saying you should give up all attachment to material association, including the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma, right? And what? Surrender entirely unto me. And so now we have this famous verse, most famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita. That's debatable. I heard a story once where somebody asked, what is some Indian man, I think, challenged Srila Prabhupada, I may be paraphrasing this incorrectly, forgive me if I am, that Swamiji, I know what the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita is. The meaning of Bhagavad Gita is when Krishna told Arjuna, now I've told you everything, you can do whatever you want. That's kind of true, but not really. Really, the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is sarva dharman parichaja mam ekam sharanam vraja sarva aham tvam sarve papebhyo moksha yishyami masucha. You should surrender all forms of dharma and just surrender yourself to me. And so what does this mean? I heard a story, my Vartmana Pradashika guru used to tell this story that he was giving class in the Soho Street Temple one time, and he was giving this class about sarva dharma and parichaja. You should surrender. You got to surrender everything to Krishna. And the next day, they were gathering in the temple room for the darshan artik, right? And he was coming in a little bit late. He said, and as like the curtains opened, like everybody in the temple room came like running out laughing, and there was a man in the temple room who took that a little bit too literally. And he took off all of his clothes and was offering them to the deities. So, what does it mean to surrender everything to Krishna? Surrendering to everything to Krishna is not a matter of our own speculation, right? We cannot speculate our method of surrendering to Krishna. Shruti Smirti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Vina Haikantiki Harer Bhakter. That devotional service that is not performed in accordance with the scriptural injunctions from the Shruti, the Smriti, the Puranadi, and the Pancharatra, these four Vedangas are mentioned, is just an unnecessary disturbance in society. So people sometimes think that surrendering means I'm not going to do anything, right? This Falgu Vairagya. I was the first, I think I told this story, I'll tell it again for people that don't hear me talk all the time. The first Janmashtami I ever celebrated was at a rainbow gathering in Colorado at about 11,000 feet above sea level. And I had just joined a month earlier at a different rainbow gathering in Oregon. And we had had so much success preaching at the rainbow gatherings, we decided to go to another one. And we decided to cook this 108 prep feast for Janmashtami on a rainbow stove, which was not quite the technology that Akuti has over here. It was just like a built-up earth mound with a big metal grate on it and a fire. And we cooked 108 preparations with only two major explosions. But I was, my job for part of the day was to try to recruit the rainbow people to help out, like cut vegetables, gather firewood, get water, help us cook. And this guy was walking by and I asked him if he wanted to help cook or help us cut. We're cooking a huge feast for Krishna. I was very fired up. We're cooking a huge feast for Krishna, come help. He's like, and he said, no, I don't do things. It's like, what? What do you mean you don't do things? He's like, I don't work. I don't perform work. I've given up all material engagement. I don't perform work. I'm like, but you're going to eat, right? Like, you're going to eat, right? Yeah, I'm going to eat whatever the Lord provides me, I'm going to eat. And I was, well, the Lord is going to provide you this, but not for free. And so this is a mistaken notion of what it means to surrender or what it means to give up material work. And we know this, of course, from the teachings of Rupa Goswami, the difference between false renunciation and yukta vairagya, practical renunciation. So we perform devotional service according to the injunctions of the scriptures. Another verse that always comes to mind when discussing these things is Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunaya Shravanade Sude Chite Kareyudaya. This is the verse from, I think, the next chapter, or even a little later in this chapter, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition of the mind. This is the verse that Prabhupada created his own English aphorism. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunaya Shravinari Sude Chitte Karyayudaya. The Krishna consciousness is not something that is derived from an outside source. It's not something I accept from somewhere else. It's something that arises automatically out of me when my consciousness has become purified. And what is the means of purifying the consciousness? This is also in the verse Shravanadi. By hearing, the consciousness becomes purified. Shuddha Chitte, consciousness becomes pure. And so surrender to Krishna is not a matter of our own speculation. And in his explanation of this verse, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, in the Upadeshamrita, Srila Prabhupada writes that Krishna consciousness is not a matter of sentimental speculation or imaginative ecstasy. Its substance is practical activity. So this man at the Rainbow Gathering was engaged in a lot of speculative, sentimental speculation and a lot of imaginative ecstasy, maybe fueled by some chemical means. But there was no practical activity. And therefore, his surrender to Krishna was not really on the path of bhakti. It was a concoction of his own mind. God bless him, anyway. So how do we surrender to Krishna? This is also explained, right? Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyasyati vishvaso goptriptve varnam tata atmanikshepa karpanye sadvidha saranagati. These are the six limbs of surrender, which, of course, I neglected to put the English translation of here. The first one, anukulyasya sankalpa. This is to do only the things that are favorable to Krishna's service. And if you don't know what is favorable to Krishna's service, ask somebody, right? Ask somebody. So if you don't know what is favorable to Krishna's service, you can always chant, right? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And that, of course, is a prayer, right? We're praying to be engaged in the service of the Lord. And so if you chant this mantra, don't be surprised if some service comes your way. And if you mean it, then are you stretching or do you want to make a comment? Okay, cool. And if you mean it, then when the service comes your way, you should say yes. So I was trained to be a yes man for Krishna. If Krishna comes and offers you some service, just say yes. And it may be difficult, but eventually good things will happen. Pratikulyasya varjanam. Avoid the things that are not good for Krishna consciousness. And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. We have our four regulative principles, right? No eating meat, fish, or eggs, abstaining from illicit sex, abstaining from intoxication, and abstaining from gambling. This is a bit of a distillation that Prabhupada gave us of the yamas and niyamas of the yoga system. This is a little bit more complicated. And in fact, Prabhupada said, you know, one time, if I told you all of the rules of Krishna consciousness, you would faint. And so we don't want anybody fainting. So we have these four regulative principles. But it doesn't just begin there. I mean, that encompasses a lot also. Sometimes with the kids, we hear, you know, they like to talk about professional sports, right? The NFL, the Super Bowl is coming up on Sunday, the NBA, the latest trades, the Premier League, the Bundesliga. And I point out to them, mostly because I don't want them to talk about this in class, that this is actually gambling. That actually, to have an emotional investment in the outcome of these games is actually breaking all of the regulative principles, all of them. And they're like, what do you mean? That's crazy. We're not doing that. I'm like, well, let me explain to you. The next time you watch those games, don't just watch the games, watch the commercials. What are they selling? What are they selling? They're selling intoxication. They're selling meat eating. They're selling illicit sex. And the whole thing is fueled by gambling. And that's just a fact. And so that's taking the association of the non-devotees, right? That's so there's the four regular principles, but then there's also varying degrees of strictness within the regulative principles. And that's pratikulyasya varjanam, right? Pratikulyasya varjanam. The standards of pure devotional service are clear, right? The standards of pure devotional service are clear. Rakshishyasti vishvasho, this means to accept the shelter of the Lord. Rakshishyatiti is raksha is to protect. So we understand that the Lord is giving us protection. I was one time distributing books in, we were doing the Christmas marathon in Munich, and my Sankirtan partner really wanted to distribute 100 books, but the shops were all closing and he had like 6 books to go. And this demon like started harassing him. Like he started like coming over and like knocking the pile of books off his arms and like getting in the middle of his sales and whatnot. And my Sankirtan partner, Varaha Murthy Prabhu, was like, he was so fired up. He was so determined to distribute those last books. And I'm like, man, it's a little fruit of here. Someone's gonna get hurt. And there was a woman, disciple of Jayapataka Swami, who an American woman who was working for the FBI. I don't know what she was working for the FBI for in Munich, but she was in Munich, and she was a Kshatriya. Yeah, she was a big, strong American woman. And her name was Nisringa Priya. And my Sankirtan partner, Varaha Murthy, after like the 4th or 5th time this demon was like harassing him, he just started screaming Nisringadev in the guy's face. Nisringadev, Nisringadev, Nisringadev. And out of nowhere, this woman, Nisringa Priya, appeared and like just leveled this man to the ground like a hockey player. Just like... wham, and the guy went sprawling. Varaha Murthy turned around, found the next guy out there, sold the 6 books, we ran to the van, and got out of town. So what's the moral of the story here? The moral of the story is that he accepted the shelter of the Lord, right? He didn't take matters into his own hands, right? He just said, well, this is a problematic situation. I'm just going to surrender to the Lord by chanting the Lord's name. Nisringadev, Nisringadev. And the Lord reciprocated immediately. What are the other ones here? Guptriptre Varanam. Help me out here. I forgot to write all the English down here. So we've got doing everything that's favorable for the Lord, not doing the things that are unfavorable for the Lord, protection of the Lord, accepting that the Lord is my only benefactor, is Atmanikshepa Karpanya, is that feeling oneself completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. I got 5. Which one am I missing? What is Rakshishati? I thought that was protection. My maintainer, my support, yeah. Yeah, some of these are quite similar, and I've often wondered what is the difference, but thank you. Atmanikshepa, go ahead. Surrender. Yeah, so it's easy to think that we are the doers here in the Western world. So still, we can go to Publix and pretty much buy whatever we need off the shelves. And it's easy to forget that actually the Lord is maintaining everything, and that without rains, there's no food. And that we are already like completely divorced from that system that's described in the Bhagavad Gita about how through this practice of sacrifice, rains are born, and from rains come grains, and from grains create more sacrifice, right? And so this is the cycle of maintaining an ecosystem, right? But we are so divorced from that, and it gives us the illusion of support. It gives us the illusion of shelter. We think our interstate highway system, all of the trucks, the cargo ships, and you can go look at all of the air traffic and all the commercial air traffic that we think is supporting our civilization here, but actually all of this is covering over the real support, the real maintainer of our civilization, who's Krishna. And so we need to remind the world of this. There is an urgent need in the world for people to be reminded of who is really the proprietor of our stuff, right? And who is really the enjoyer of consciousness, right? We're out here trying to enjoy. I'll just tell one more little story. We had sometimes kids do silly things and they get into stuff that they shouldn't get into, and then they do things with it that they shouldn't do. And I won't go into any details, but I was talking with somebody who did something like this the other day, and it's like, why are you doing this? And it was like a real-time thing. And it's like, you're making a mess. Like, the stuff is everywhere. This has got to get cleaned up. And he's like, well, I just thought it would be fun. Like, all right, I mean, nobody is denying you your fun, but everything has to be done according to time, place, and circumstances, and this is not the time, the place, or the circumstances for this. And it had to do with this roll of saran wrap that had been lying around somewhere for days on end. And I'm like explaining to them, but you know that that's not what that's for, right? Like, the saran wrap is not for mummifying yourself. Sorry. All right. I gave the details anyway. I'm sorry. Apologies. And the other thing is you also know that the saran wrap is not yours. So why take it and do things with it? And this is the mentality of everybody in the living in the material world. We go out into the world, we see things, we claim them as our own, even though they are not ours, and then we try to use them for our own enjoyment. And where has this gotten us as a species? We are on the brink of destruction. We are constantly on the brink of war. We are constantly on the brink of environmental catastrophe. There's a thin layer of protection, you know, against a world where the Great Lakes were catching on fire, or there were smog warnings in major cities, right? This is a thin veneer of safety that we live in. And it's thin because we forget who the real shelter is, right? So this is the message that we concluded our Indigenous Fair with last year, that Isya Vasyam Idam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagacham Jagat Chena Chakchena Bunchita Mad Gridaha Kasya Svitanam, that everything that is in the world is owned and operated by the Lord. And therefore we should only take what is given to us as our quota, and we should not take more, knowing well to whom they belong. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Hare Krishna. We got any questions, comments, complaints, criticisms, donations? We'll take them all. No, she was in Germany. She was a congregation member. I don't know why she was living in Germany. Maybe she had formerly worked for the FBI, but she was living there. She was a congregation member of the Munich Temple. Yeah, it was all in Munich on a cold winter night. Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask about, the big American lady came and saved you. Was she already a devotee at that time?
Yeah. She was a fully initiated devotee at the time.
I was wondering if she became a devotee because of that incident. But.
No. She was an Nisringa Priya. Yeah. Yeah. They. Yeah. And we were traveling on behalf of Simhachalam, Nisringadev's farm in Germany, too. So it was all very poignant.
Yeah, cool. You kind of referenced the Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam verse talking about how Krishna's the enjoyer of everything.
Yeah.
And he's the controller of everything. And the third one is people who are approaching the mode of goodness may sometimes think, oh, I'm everybody's friend.
Yeah.
But we can't be. Only Krishna is really.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, thank you. So that's concluding the passage of that verse. Also, Krishna is also Suridam Sarvadehinam. He's the friend of every living entity. And Krishna is the only friend of every living entity. And Krishna is, in fact, your only friend, right? Because all of your, that's a hard truth to hear. And we are all friendly with each other, right? We all know and love each other, and we're friendly. There's not too much hostility amongst us, right? But we're all going to die, right? And we're going to move on. And maybe we won't take another body and Krishna will be our friend. Maybe we will take another body and we'll have so many new friends. Maybe they'll be the same friends, but we have forgotten. I mean, sometimes we have an experience that you know you hung out with this person in the last life. But you don't really know, right? That's your speculation. So, yeah, thank you. That's a good point. Oh, there's a follow-up. Yeah.
Question on that.
Okay.
Because Krishna is said to be non-different from his name, fame, form, qualities, pastimes, and associates.
Yeah.
So what about Krishna's devotees? Aren't they also our friends?
That's like, so in the International Baccalaureate program, when we're putting together like teaching units, there are like factual-based questions, and there are some like conceptual questions, and then there are debatable questions. And I would put that in the category of debatable. And so, which means I don't know, and I'm not going to debate it right now. Stita, of course, wants to chime in here. What? You missed the whole first half of the class where I was talking about that. Let's come up here to the front. We are. We should definitely endeavor to make friends with devotees. Yes. What does that mean? Friend. Yeah, this is what you're speaking about, one of the qualities of the devotees.
Yeah, the 12th chapter, Gita. Maitra Karuna Avacha. So that's the quality of pure devotees. The whole half of the 12th chapter, starting with a non-envious friend.
I think just to avoid the time it takes to get the microphone off the other, I think you're going to mention he used the caveat pure devotees there. Is that what you were going to say? No, okay, I'm wrong. What were you going to say? I'll repeat it into the mic. Just yell it out.
I was going to say, the 26 qualities of the devotee.
Yeah.
He does not pick a quarrel with anyone. Titadi Muni Prabhu.
He does not deserve to be singled out for that, even in this room. I think we had a question or comment up here in the front. Is that right? Yeah. I heard you raise your hand in my mind. Yeah. Maybe.
Well, for people, a lot of us have to work outside,
yeah.
And so we have to associate with non-devotees. Like everyone I work with is, not a member of ISKCON. So, what is the best way? I mean, I know we probably shouldn't hang out and engage in the same activities so much. But what is the best way to associate with our coworkers? Because there is some amount of social
interaction. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I just go back to what we were just talking about a moment ago, is that a devotee is friendly to every living entity. But a devotee is also not involved in the worlds of friends and enemies. So we are in the world, and we are kind, and we're compassionate, and we're empathic, and, but we are not, but we also have boundaries, right? I mean, that is what we are giving to the world without having to take anything back from it. So we need support within our own devotional life to get what we need. So I mean, I've worked in a lot of non-devotional capacities, and I find that it's possible to preach Krishna consciousness without saying anything to anybody. Just by being a devotee, and we had our raising our vibrations. I mean, that sounds a little hippie-ish, but it's a fact. If we are clear in our own spiritual lives, that radiates out. I mean, Krishna is the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what the word Krishna means. And so everybody in the universe who's not an outright demon is attracted to Krishna. That is a fact. That's a philosophical fact. It's also an observable fact. That when Krishna is presented as he is, everybody loves Krishna. People don't even know they love Krishna. I mean, George Harrison wrote this in the introduction to the Krishna book, that everybody's looking for Krishna, they just don't even know it. And that when a devotee is able to go into the world and just be a clear vessel for Krishna's unlimited anandam buddhi vardhanam, people pick up on that. And I've had experience of this in my own life. And so it's preaching. And then I also think devotees become a little bit jaded, right? So when we talk about coming back to the Madhyam platform, and what are the distinctions that we need to make, and what is the discrimination? First, we have to discriminate between who is a devotee and who is not a devotee. And there are devotees in every religious tradition. It's not. I hope that's not offending any like of the real orthodoxy or the loyalists here. There are devotees in every religion, and there are non-devotees in every religion also. So we have to see beneath the veneer of names, of upadis. An ISKCON devotee is just as much as an upadi as Presbyterian or whatever. And we may need to use these kinds of words in order to describe ourselves to other people. That's okay, but we shouldn't become attached to them. So the first discrimination is who is a devotee and who is a non-devotee. And then amongst the devotees, we want to who do we respect from a distance? Who do we take association with? And amongst the non-devotees, we also have to discriminate between who is innocent and who's like really going to be inimical. And we should avoid the inimical people. But the innocent people, it is human nature to be curious about these things. We often pick on scientists because the proportion of atheists in the scientific community is higher than it is outside the community. But the overwhelming majority of scientists, I'm talking like in the 70s and 80%, are agnostic, meaning they don't know, and they're interested, and they're curious, and they're searching. And so we can talk to these people on the level. Maharaj, you want to contribute something? I saw your hand up. I don't want to dominate too much, a little bit. I'm giving a whole other lecture in an hour somewhere else. Plug that in a minute. Yes.
Now, I've had a little difficulty with you merging in the name ISKCON with a whole plethora of upadis and just meaningless words. It is a fact, historically, I remember reading it, maybe in Lilamrita, that Srila Prabhupada, you know, it's just like he had an inspiration, and it wasn't whimsical, but he said, you know, he kind of said, okay, ISKCON, and, you know, so it could have been something else. But on the other hand, when we compare what it means, the International Society for Krishna or God Consciousness, it's in a class by itself. It's I wouldn't say that it's the same as Hindu, Buddhist, Christian, Zoroastrian.
Yeah, I appreciate that point. I think this is dependent upon the consciousness of the person who's using the term. So when we talk about the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we are also talking about, you know, all of it. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But, you know, in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada writes that the activities of a materialistic person and the activities of a spiritual person appear to be the same. The difference is the consciousness. So it is possible to bring a materialistic identification as an ISKCON devotee, the same way that somebody would bring a materialistic identification as a Presbyterian or a Zoroastrian. So I don't disagree with your point at all. What I'm saying is not about the bigger picture. It's about the consciousness that devotees identify with an organization. Vega. I feel, yeah. I don't see a disagreement. I mean, but you can hit back.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Some years back, I lived at Gitanagari for a long time, and Sureshwar Prabhu was living there, and he had what I thought was a really beautiful point. He said, our goal in spiritual life, Krishna Loka and all what we know about it, is so much higher than the goals expressed of, say, Christianity, Judaism, or something like that. And he said, but someone in one of those other paths may be farther along on the path than we are. And so it behooves us to be respectful to them and encourage them, you know. So that's just another way of responding.
Yes, St. Francis of Assisi was also a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, right? And so there's layers that we can see these things generally, and I'll just make this concluding point as it's approaching 9 o'clock here, and we can, you know, quarrel amongst ourselves later. Generally speaking, we should preach the positive message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his Senapati Bhakta, you know, brought a great gift, gave a great gift to the Western world. We can just pass that gift out. There's no need to pick on anybody else's beliefs, anybody else's epistemology. There's so much positive energy just in what we have. We can positively preach the Bhagavatam. We don't need to make distinctions of us and them. That is the upadhi. We are all devotees of the Lord. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati one time said, it's an illusion to think that you are making a devotee. Everybody is a devotee. The nature of the living entity is to be a devotee of God. Our job is to remind them. Our job is to remind them. And so what is palatable, you know? Everything according to time, place, and circumstance. Some people want to get into like philosophical debates and see who comes out on top. Other people just want to eat gulab jamuns and dance. You know, there's something for everybody in Krishna consciousness. And so we should preach the positive message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna. Let's go.